Welcome back to American Scene, the show where we talk about movies with American in the title and what they have to say about American identity, culture, and values. My name is Ben Rosen.
I am Alan Austin.
If you have anything you want to say about the show, any of our previous episodes, or anything we cover today, please connect with us on Twitter at @AmericanScene_ or send us an email at AmericanScenePod@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram at AmericanScenePod. Alan, it's been a couple weeks. What's been going on? Where you been? What's happening in your world?
My world is very hectic right now. I am finishing up my master's in sports communications, a very specific major at Iona College, and this is crunch time. My thesis film, which is about whether or not horse racing is ethical, is finishing up, and it's just been a whirlwind of stuff to do. I have a wedding coming up in July. It's been a tornado of responsibility for me lately. What's been up with you?
Gotta say, much less than that.
Well, keep in mind, all of that is self-inflicted on my part.
Yes. A self-inflicted wedding.
that's a great Fallout Boy title track.
That's great. No, I've just been working. The weather's finally turning nice here in Oregon. It's a beautiful day today. I took the day off because I got my second dose of the Pfizer shot, which kind of knocked me on my ass this morning, but I'm feeling good. I'm feeling ready to go. And once we're done here, I'll probably go for a run, go outside, enjoy the sunshine, which I'm not usually able to do on a Thursday afternoon.
Yeah, it sounds like you and I had pretty similar responses to the second dose, which was fatigue, but ultimately not a day killer.
I was very thankful to have slept an extra 3 hours today. It was wonderful, especially because my cat, of all nights, she has not done this before, but of all nights, she wakes me up at 5 a.m. like attacking my feet under the covers, you know what I mean? It just, like, come on, man. I woke up literally like on the hour 5:30, 6:30, 7:30, and then I actually forgot that I had set a meeting at 8:30 this morning, which I had already like looped in one of my coworkers to join. But I woke up, I did that meeting, it was a great meeting, and then I went right back to bed.
Yeah. So you and I are both now fully vaccinated, and as of today, the CDC is saying you don't even have to wear your mask indoors if you pass the 2 weeks. So while that's great news, I'm still going to be like super careful. And to be honest with you, I am like shell-shocked to the point of like crippling fear with most things COVID. And I know people will call me a wuss or like a chicken or one of those suckers, you know, the conspiracy people. I don't care. I can only do me, and can't worry about what anyone's going to say, think, or do around me. Just got to control my own actions. So there are people I will feel comfortable personally around without a mask, but I'm still going to the supermarket, still doing all that with masks, and I'm sure that'll still be the rule for some time.
For the foreseeable future, yeah, I'll just feel more comfortable with a mask, like in the supermarket or something like that. And yeah, I think that's fair, you know, measured risk-taking for
right.
the foreseeable
like,
future.
Like, I know my family's, you know, my parents at least are vaccinated. I've already not worn the mask in front of them, so this is just reassuring me that it's okay. So, yeah good stuff. We talk about all these American movies all the time. To the folks at home, we will not be covering American TV shows. Like, we only have so many hours, we only have so much time, and to sit and watch all these seasons of American Dreams or what was that American with Joey Lawrence played like the Dick Clark character?
Wasn't that American Dreams?
Was that American Dreams?
That was okay. American Dreams, yeah. And then, yeah, I've watched one episode of American Horror Story. I'm not interested in
Well, it also
digging
wouldn't
into
be
that.
Like an American theme episode by episode. So we'd really be wasting our time.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, I love movies. You love movies. I'm much more of a movie guy than a TV guy. Always have been. So I think this is appropriate. I would love to dig into some American music at some point. Songs with American in the title would just be like a fun bonus episode. We could invite somebody on who can, you know, who's much more knowledgeable in the music realm to have some fun with that one. But today we are lighting up American Ultra.
Oh,
did you like that one?
Ooh, I do. That's one of your better ones because it's simple yet very on brand.
Yeah. This is a 2015 film directed by Nima Nourizadeh, written by Max Landis, starring Jesse Eisenberg, Kristen Stewart, Topher Grace, Walton Goggins, Connie Britton, John Leguizamo, Tony Hale, and Bill Pullman. Critics were mixed on it, but the audience was not. They did not see this movie. This was a $28 million budget, and it made $28 million worldwide. And I'm kind of shocked because, like, this is basically like a stoner Born Identity, kind of like a kind of bonkers Born Identity with like a little bit of the Truman Show aspect in there, which we'll get to. But like, this is a pretty commercial film. Like, it's pretty straightforward as a concept. And I'm just kind of shocked that it didn't do better. I don't know why. What did you think of it?
Well, I thought, you know, if you watched Pineapple Express, this is almost like a spiritual sequel to that. Like, you know, add in some of the Born elements, like you said, and there's no reason to, you know, effectively sit this one out that I can think of. Like, I remember the marketing campaign. I remember saying, I'd watch that, but I never did. So are you saying that there's like hundreds of millions of people like me out there who are like, or hundreds of millions of dollars worth of people out there like me who wanted to see it and just never got around to it? That could happen, I guess, for a movie that's not, because the star power in this film's not necessarily there. So maybe that's kind of what cost it, because this is around when people were kind of rebelling against Kristen Stewart as an idea anyway. So maybe that had something to do with it. I don't know. But it's a fine movie, in my opinion. Like, it's definitely, you know, it's not super offensive. It shares a lot of themes of American Assassin, and I far, far would rather watch this than American Assassin. I think some of the humor even works in this movie. I think it's got, you know, we're not going to get into the weeds of the people who made the movie, but as it stands on its own, it was a fine, super violent, kind of funny, very flashy, trying to be cool hour and a half.
Yeah, and I think the performances were pretty good. Like, I liked Jesse Eisenberg. I like Kristen Stewart. Topher Grace is in his element as a just complete douche. It's wonderful.
If there's any weak spot in the movie, I think it's Topher. But other than that, Eisenberg, Stewart, Connie Britton. I keep wanting to say Connie Nielsen for some reason, but Connie Britton. And then you get some Pullman at the end. So performance. Oh, and I love Johnny Leguizamo. So I was like pleasantly surprised by the performances, actually. And there are some jokes that really work in this movie. So yeah, it was entertaining for sure.
I had to look up John Leguizamo's age because he's over 50. I don't, and like, you know, Tom Cruise, like, loves to take his shirt off. Like, he's a good looking dude, but like, John Leguizamo, man, like, pretty jacked. Like, he's a good looking dude for his age, and just tatted up. Like, he looks great. It's kind of shocking. You forget the how long he's been around.
And he was one of my favorites.
Got that swagger. He's still got that swagger.
Absolutely. And he'll take like different kinds of roles. Like, he popped up in the Waco miniseries.
Yeah.
Like, he's got his own Broadway stuff going on all the time. So, quite a career. Very underrated career for John Leguizamo.
Yeah, for sure.
But that being aside, like, you've got a stacked cast. And Connie Britton was third choice for the role after Uma Thurman had to drop out. And then Sharon Stone had to drop out. And Connie Britton came in. I don't have any real beef with this movie in terms of sitting there and watching it. Like, I may not agree with all the choices and this, that, and the other thing, and some of the what makes a hero elements, which we'll get into, but it was fine. There's nothing super offensive in this movie that made me go, ugh. So, you know, I think a lot of the American elements we'll get into are pretty surface level and stuff we've seen already in some of the movies we've covered, as I teased before.
Yeah, yeah. This is another, or I think it wanted to be part of this other American film subgenre, which is the stoner movie. I think that's kind of how it was billed. I think if you look at the posters, they really build it as this is going to be like a fun stoner action movie. I do not count this among stoner films because
no.
As a former smoker, I would never watch something this violent if I were high. Like, this would be a bad hang. So to speak.
I also think it loses all the stoner elements about a half hour in. I don't think he smokes another joint until like the last 15 minutes.
But I do appreciate the stoner film subgenre. You mentioned Pineapple Express, which is, I think, a brilliant film, which I can dig into in the minisode about why I think it's not just a good movie, or not just a good stoner movie, but an actually really, really intelligent film that has more commentary, more social commentary than this film has. But I think there is something inherently political about stoner movies in general, just because it's still illegal at the federal level. And so throughout history, the characters in these movies are always outsiders, you know? Yeah. The characters we're focusing on in stoner films are othered in some way. They're not part of the mainstream. They're outsiders. Even if they're popular or cool among their group, they're not part of the accepted class of society. And I think you do see that here too, you know, with who these two characters are, played by Eisenberg and Stewart.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, when we look back time capsule style on some of the movies of this time, there are going to be elements that are super outdated. And one of them is the stoner is the stoner trope. Like, it's going to be so comical in the future to look back at what a stoner was seen as in media, as just this like complete goofball, lazy, waste of life character. A lot of examples of 90s films come to mind. Like, the stoner character is always just some like introspective, like bum in a way. And, you know, when marijuana eventually becomes federally legalized, which is probably going to happen at some point, there's going to be way more smokers of different varieties, this and other things. So looking at like movies like this are probably going to be dated at some point in the future.
Yeah. And they're in West Virginia in this film. And I'm trying to remember, did West Virginia recently either legalize recreational or medical? I can't remember if that was one of the states in just this past election that legalized it in some form. I can't remember. I'll have to look that up. But in terms of some of the other elements that I want to dig into, you're right that it touches on some things we've talked about before, from, you know, the government is the bad guy, you know, government control in some way. Like American Assassin, which you mentioned before, this is another movie with a government agency using mentally or emotionally or otherwise compromised people as manipulated field assets. I thought, and I mentioned The Truman Show earlier because I think there's an interesting comp there too, where our main character isn't aware of his own history. His girlfriend is in on it. His trauma won't let him leave his small town. And he's controlled by this all-powerful system, albeit a different kind of eye in the sky, you know, with like drones and satellites and things, not Ed Harris in the moon with Paul Giamatti. But yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's the first thing it hit me was, you know, a lot of the government decides what's good, what's bad, and Topher Grace's character. First of all, the big miss of the movie, the big loophole, and maybe you could fill me in, is why is Topher Grace so dead set on killing Jesse Eisenberg? Like, what is the motivation? Because at some point, you just got to cut your losses if you're Topher Grace and let him be. Like, the moment you lose one soldier or one government official, you go, you know what, is this worth it? And his boss, because clearly he just got promoted within the movie recently, like within the last 5 years, his boss would be like, what's going on here in West Virginia? This is not a good use of our time, funds, or the 4 billion soldiers you brought with you. Like, a lot of it doesn't make much sense in that regard. But the government deciding that if you're not for this particular mission, you're committing treason. That's a theme. Like, who's right, who's wrong? Well, who's got the power? Because that'll determine what you should be following. Like, there's a really good character in this movie, and it's an actor I absolutely love. And I really like the choice they made, and that's the Walt Goggins character, who comes in as a mentally unstable mercenary. And his arc is a really interesting one. And I don't know if like this was trying to set up a franchise or what they were trying to do with this film, but his character could have easily slid into future installments as a good guy. So I really like what they did here with some of the elements that American Assassin just completely missed the mark on.
Yeah, Walt Goggins actually, I feel like, is kind of the Dylan O'Brien character taken in a different direction. The Dylan O'Brien character from American Assassin, the guy who is the obedient puppy who just follows orders and has been conditioned to act this way on behalf of the government. Speaking of obedient dogs, I don't think it's very subtle how many references there are to animals, and two particular animals. You have dogs and primates. So the commentary there being obedience versus intelligence, obedience versus free will, obvious history with, you know, with experimentation, Pavlov's dogs, I mentioned conditioning, not to mention an entire franchise of films using chimpanzees as sociopolitical commentary. So that's baked into the movie. Something I only noticed on my second watch was Mike's last name, Howl, as in a dog howling.
Oh, really? You connected that?
Oh, absolutely. You don't think that that was intentional?
I'm sure everything was intentional. I just wouldn't have picked up on that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it took me the second watch to, like, clue into that. But I thought that was one element of this broader motif. Topher Grace calls Connie Britton his dog, tells her, sit, stay, behave, in that opening scene. Tony Hale's ringtone is a dog barking. There's dogs outside John Leguizamo's house. Bill Pullman at the end is accusing Connie Britton of doing too much to try to save her puppy, who's scary and rabid and murders people. I thought that was kind of a nice scene to kind of cap the whole thing off.
Not to mention they use the outbreak monkey theme to portray bad. Like, oh, these free thinkers are not obedient, therefore they're the problem and must be stopped.
Right. Right. Dangerous. And then you have the Apollo ape of it all, this comic book that that Mike is drawing, referencing sending primates into space, which is obviously another government program on top of the MK Ultra program that's referenced here, which was this CIA run human experiment from the 50s through the early 70s, where volunteers, prisoners, and unwitting subjects were administered hallucinogenic drugs in an attempt to develop incapacitating substances and chemical mind control agents. So again, you have this historical element of obedience, government controlling people. And I guess, oh, there's another reference also to primitive species when Topher Grace calls Kristen Stewart Tarzan and says to go back to her ape, referring to Mike. So I guess the argument that they're making here is that the film is making is, you know, not to be a puppy or a dog, but to be an ape. Dogs are obedient to humans. They can be trained, whereas primates have the capability for intelligent thought, independence. And of course, they're the animal most closely related to humans. So, that's what I took away from it.
You're a brilliant person. I don't think you get enough credit.
Well, it's all right. It's all right there. I don't know. I this film is not particularly deep, and I think all that is pretty surface level. I don't think it goes too much further than that.
It is, but I didn't think of it. I didn't think of it. You brain. Look at the big brain on Brad.
Check out the big brain on Brad. You're a smart motherfucker. That's right.
I do think there's a theme also of ultraviolence. There are violent images in this film that don't make sense. Like, there are weapons used that aren't going to do what they did in real life. Like, he takes a shovel and immediately just impales it, like, 4 inches into someone's neck. He does the same with the back of a hammer. Like, just one swipe and it's dug in there pretty deep. Stuff that doesn't make sense, but it's just this big, grotesque, ultra-violent movie. And I think that's why it's called American Ultra. Like, America loves violence. I mean, there's the age-old observation that American viewers are okay with violence but not sex. Like, it is very American to showcase violence in the media. I think there's some kind of element of that to this, too, because the violence hits you flashy, fast, and bloody.
Yeah. Also, oh, I didn't even write this down for one of my American moments. I'm not going to save it, but the fireworks of it all. Like, one of such a – that he uses – fireworks as a method of attack when he's on the attack at the end of the film. Very American. That he's firing them out of a Humvee is like very, very significant. Yeah,
there's you know, now that you mention it, the dog stuff really hits you over the head many, many times, and a second watch would have really helped me pick up on that. But the movie ends with him as the ape cartoon ripping the guy's head off,
which, you know, is Yeah, which is the thing that kind of undoes, I think, what
right,
the film
now he's
is trying to say. Exactly.
To Connie Britton.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah.
My God, we are geniuses.
It'd be like the whole point of the movie is undone by the fact that, that Mike rejoins the CIA. It'd be like if Truman, at the end of the Truman Show, started producing reality TV or like went on The Bachelor or something. It's like, wait.
Or didn't fell you, for another 24/7 reality show.
Like, didn't you want to break free from this? Like, it's so strange.
Well, that's part of the American government knows what's best if you're on the right side. You know what I mean? Like, it's – but you're right. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did like the Walt Goggins character. There was that – the last moments he has, I think, also go to that obedience versus free will theme.
I'm sorry. I can't control it. The things that they did to my head. They made you like they made me. But you're better than me. Who told you what to do?
Nobody.
That must be nice.
And again, the whole thing is undone like two scenes later because then Mike's being told what to do. But at least he's embraced it now and like he's a little bit more in charge. I don't know.
I guess he's saying like if I don't agree with this mission, I'm not going to do it. But he also like... he also gets saved because Connie Britton's like, wow, look at this asset we have. He's worth $400 million and can be a soldier to use at our, you know, discretion. And that's how he gets saved at the end. So what really gets learned here is my point.
Yeah. Yeah. You thought that, you know, that throughout they're referring to these two programs, Tough Guy versus Wise Man, and the duality there being Mike is the wise from that Wise Man program. So he is of higher intelligence versus the Tough Guy program, which is just a bunch of badasses. Walt Goggins is one of these mercenaries, and that's the difference, is these tough guys don't have that higher intelligence, don't have that free will. The Wise Man does, but then at the end, the Wise Man kind of embraces that tough guy aspect. It loses it for me right there at the end. I'm like, you want to see Mike go to Hawaii with Phoebe.
That should have been the ending of the movie. Two things. One, they kind of toe the line at the end with the Goggins character also, where they borderline just complete mental disability as opposed to guy who's just being controlled. It's a little odd. They toe the line. I don't think they cross it entirely, but it definitely led me to – it left me tilting my head a little bit. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, but the government was fucking with him.
They were messing with his head. I'm in. I said they towed it. I didn't say they crossed it.
And the other thing is, if he was just playing it like that, that would be problematic. But within the context of the film, it's like clearly he's been through some shit mentally.
The other thing is, how old is Phoebe supposed to be? Because like, I don't think they recruit government agents at like 20 years old. So theoretically, Phoebe would have to be in her early 30s at this point. Which is believable, but Kristen Stewart doesn't look like she's in her early 30s.
Yeah.
Small potatoes.
I don't know how early they recruit. I imagine they probably recruit as early as, you know, they recruit soldiers. I mean, when you're young and
maybe
able to be sort of indoctrinated. I don't know.
And then at the end, it's almost like Connie Britton's character can't even save the day herself and save her guy. She needs Bill Pullman to come in to forgive her and save the day. Because it's Bill Pullman who tipped her off in the first place. It's Bill Pullman who comes in and kills the bad guy. It's Bill Pullman who allows Jesse Eisenberg and Connie Britton to walk free. So ultimately, like, Bill Pullman's the only person that can call the shots here on out. It's just got, like, he comes in to save the day, but he's the one who instigated the problem anyway. So he put out the fire he started, sort of thing.
Yeah, it was, in terms of plot holes, I'm like, if he knew that this was going down, why tip off Connie Britton's character in the first place? Like, why didn't he
out
just like stop it But why didn't he just stop it from the beginning? Like, if he had the power to do so and rein in Topher Grace, it just, yeah. Anyway, we can get into some of the plot holes in the minisode, but yeah, that was a strange decision. It could have avoided so much mayhem, which I think you're right about the whole, I didn't comment on your insight into the American ultraviolence aspect of it, but I think that's definitely accurate. And, you know, you said somebody like Topher Grace might more realistically cut their losses. I don't know that that's true. You know, I think we've seen the government kind of act like, well, in for a penny, in for a pound. Right. If you look at these the never ending wars in the Middle East and the fact that an MK Ultra program went on for 20 years, you know, how long do you go with a program and expend money when you're not seeing results that you necessarily want? Or and then suddenly you just decide to make that switch and be like, no, we're going to kill him.
Yeah, you know? I do think, though, that like what I meant by that was, killing him in general didn't need to be done. Like, it just, they wanted to wipe him out because they were just trying to like wash their hands of the program, but they also could have just let things continue the way they were and not even have an issue with it. So that's something where it didn't matter. Like, there's also a lot of shades of Captain America's story arc in here, being now that I'm like super well versed in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Captain America and many like him were experimented on by the government to create super soldiers to do their bidding. In the new series Falcon and the Winter Soldier, they touch on that a lot. It's one of the big storylines in that series. So this is like an age-old story, as Angela Lansbury once said, tale as old as time. So, you know, like, it's definitely the American government is very much a... The history of their experiments and their super soldiers is a common theme throughout this film as well.
Yeah, I'm glad we didn't see a super jacked up Jesse Eisenberg. That would have been very strange. You think he'll ever get ripped for a movie? You think that'll ever happen? You just like Kumail Nanjiani, just like drop that pic on Instagram, be like, damn, Jesse, yeah. Holy shit.
No. Kumail even said, like, I wouldn't have done this if they didn't pay me to. So some movie would have to come along to pay Jesse to do that. And I don't think you're going to cast Jesse Eisenberg if you're going to need someone to look like that. So, no.
Yeah.
Do you want to get into, like, the movie, some of the stuff you thought of the film itself and, like, just what you saw watching this thing as a movie-going experience?
I feel like we touched on it a little bit already. I mean, like, it was fine. You know, I didn't... You know, like American Assassin, you and I both had a very visceral reaction to that, in a way that I didn't have any sort of reaction either way to this. I thought there were some elements that were really nice. The performances were really good. One moment that I thought was really compelling was the whole the metaphor of the car and the tree when they're talking, when they're sitting on top of the hood of the car, and Mike is like,
"This car is always going, and that tree is always just like." Like stopping, you know, like it's just been stopping there for years until tonight when it met something that it didn't want to keep going. And it was just like, no, you're stopping too. And then this tree that has never done anything is fucking like destroying this beautiful, like really beautiful and fast moving thing. And
why are you crying?
Because Phoebe, like, am I that tree?
That was really effective.
That was really effective. There was a scene where when Mike realizes that Phoebe was in on it and he's asking her, are you my girlfriend? I thought that was a really good scene too. Like, yeah. I really felt something there and felt for him.
Yeah.
Like, because you empathize with both or sympathize. You sympathize with both of them. You're rooting for both of them, which this movie, you know, kudos to this movie. I rooted for the good guys. So, and one thing that severely lacked American Assassin was that they do in this movie is the government's not flawless.
Right. Like, right.
That's a big plus to this movie where there are good guys in the government and there are bad guys. Whereas American Assassin was like, the government's for your best interest and that's that.
Right.
And the only person who's bad is the one who went against the government.
Right.
So... This film's like, it gets a pass on a lot of that kind of stuff, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm kind of, like the way I feel about it is I think the performances were better than the movie.
Yeah, yeah, we've referenced a lot of the plot holes and stuff that if the movie were a drama, it would be really bad. But because there's lighter elements, because we're rooting for these characters, because the performances are so endearing, we're fine with it. Like, it gets a pass. Like, I heard on the radio today, it was actually a podcast, shout out to the Desus and Mero Bodega Boys, but they were talking about how they watched Mortal Kombat, and they just sat there and enjoyed it because they weren't expecting to, like, they didn't go in with the mindset, this better be of a quality, etc. They were just like, I'm looking for an hour and a half to just sit back, watch some awesome kills, and go home afterwards. And that's kind of what this movie does. So if you put yourself in the right mindset where you're not overanalyzing, you will be entertained as long as you don't mind the violence for an hour and a half.
Yeah, I appreciate how straightforward this movie was. It doesn't take a long time to get into it. And, you know, some of the set pieces are a lot of fun. The fight scenes are a lot of fun. And I always appreciate when a simple, straightforward story can be done well. You know how much a fan of Speed I am. The movie Speed with Keanu Reeves, of course.
Not the drug.
Yes, of course, yes. This isn't the '80s. Yeah, like I just love when a really simple concept can be done well, and I don't think they knocked it out of the park here, but it was a fine time. It was a fine time. I was engaged throughout.
It was not a drag at any point. It moved.
Nope.
Like,
yeah.
There was not a moment where I was bored in this movie, and that's saying something.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to like here. There's a lot to like. But yeah, you know, just enjoy it. Jesse Eisenberg, who I put up a question on Twitter, which I said, who is the most 2000s actor? And Jesse Eisenberg could be in the conversation, you know, of a 10-year span where he was in a lot of stuff. And I really enjoyed the Adventureland coupling of him and Stewart all over again, because I'm a huge fan of Adventureland. So I was in on their pairing. I think they have good chemistry.
I think so, too. I don't think Eisenberg really pops off in the 2000s until the late 2000s, so it's kind of tough to...
I don't consider him a 2000s actor, but there's a 10-year span that crosses over two different decades where he's one of those guys.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think it's time we got to roll into our American moments.
You're playing our song.
All right, I'll kick it off.
Go for it.
What's more American than your small-town USA convenience store? Your small-town USA mom-and-pop convenience store, and they double it with the mom and pop sporting goods store. A mom and pop, which I know by reading the trivia, the writer wanted to be a Walmart, couldn't get the rights, so he renamed it after himself. But it works out in our benefit because it gives us another American moment.
For sure, for sure. Although, I mean, Walmart, one of the most American.
Yeah, but mom and pop has a certain more fun thing to it.
Yeah, especially in a small town like Lyman, West Virginia. Which was my first American moment. It's like, shout out to Joe Manchin. We talked about Bill Pullman, who shows up first in voiceover as a sort of deep throat.
Yeah.
Very American moment. The voice on the phone giving Connie Britton the heads up about what was about to go down.
Yep. Yep. So you brought up the fireworks, which was one of mine on my list, where he just comes in blasting fireworks to get through. Just pretty American.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't pick up the flag on the wall of the CIA, which of course there's going to be a flag on the wall, but as is typical of this podcast, there's always a flag on the wall somewhere. So we got
except for our backgrounds, which no one can see anyway.
We got to call it out when we see it. Was that all you had on your list?
Those were the main two. I'm trying to like think if there were any others. There's no like, yeah, you know, when he's cooking, he's making eggs. He's not making like an apple pie or anything. So, like, No, that's pretty much it. Because a lot of the stuff is the stuff we talked about, like the Apollo ape. You know, the moon, the Apollo, everything there is like already hitting the nail on the head. So
yeah, I picked out fantasy football. There's a brief reference to fantasy football when what's his name from Breaking Bad shows up.
Lowell, but I forget his character here is named.
I wonder if he even
Big
gets
Harold.
A name.
Big Harold.
Big Harold. Great. Yeah, yeah, he mentions, oh no, he doesn't mention it. He's the one who's not involved, right? I think in the,
yeah
he gets left out of fantasy football. It's a fun little moment. I thought, you mentioned the Humvee and the fireworks, but I think a Humvee ramming a Subaru off the road, great American moment.
Man, you were on point this episode. What I'm glad this episode did something. So as many loopholes as we mentioned in terms of like what makes sense, what doesn't, the movie sets up a lot of odd things and then pays them off each time. Like there are many moments where I'm like, wait, what? And then they answer it immediately afterwards. One of them was the gas. How did Kristen Stewart know what the gas was? I'm like, oh, how would she know that? Boom, they answered it right away. Another one was, how is he using a frying pan to ricochet the bullet? And then he goes, ah, the old frying pan bullet trick. I'm like, that's enough for me.
The old frying pan bullet trick.
Like, I don't need any more of an explanation. So I was very happy with that. Like, even if it was stupid, some of the things that didn't make sense, they worked into the world. And, you know, it has nothing to do with American moments. I just wanted to bring it up before we stop talking about it.
Yeah, the frying pan, that's CIA training 101 right there.
You can also learn that by watching Chopped. Daffy Duck gets referenced.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yep.
Oh, man. Man. Another animal.
Do you have any other American moments?
I mean, just Bill Pullman's presence in the film, you know, the Independence Day intertextuality of you know, being another government official here, but a very different character. That's all I got. What do you give this movie for a rating?
I give this movie, oh, real quick, fireworks did pay off because they set that up early and they bring it back, which I had forgotten about the fireworks until he shot them off. So nice.
With the fireworks, I forget, did we get a Tarantino trunk shot?
Not in the sense you're thinking. Like, we briefly see the inside of the trunk, but from the outside, not point of view inside the trunk.
No.
But so it's tough because I kind of want to give this movie a positive recommendation. So, but I also feel like giving it 3 stars feels a little much. But I'm going to go for it because if you can handle the violence, you'll be entertained for an hour and a half. Like, so I'm going to give this film 3 out of 4 just to get it to that positive recommendation. I'm going to give it 3 out of 4 CIA walkie-talkies.
Okay.
Because we see a lot of CIA walkie-talkies in this movie, and I've never seen those kind of walkie-talkies anywhere else. So a lot of government, American government symbolism. So I'll give it 3 walkie-talkies.
All right. I give this 2 neck-slicing dustpans.
Jesus.
You mentioned the things that, well, obviously the ultraviolence, but the things that that Mike and other people use as weapons in this film, and the first time he uses it, I forget when, but then he uses it again at the end, and that's fun. And I like also when he's strapped to that chair at the end, and he sees the dustpan in the kitchen, he's like... He just kind of giggles about it because I giggled about it too. I was like, that's well played.
Yeah, no, there are some funny moments in this movie that, you know, when Goggins reveals he got his teeth back to Topher Grace, when Mike asks Connie Britton's character, "Are you my mom?" because he doesn't fully understand what's going on, I audibly laughed. So I do recommend this movie enough. I'm changing my symbol. So instead of 3 government walkie-talkies, I'm giving it 3 neon yellow pointy signs with black lettering that say 3 stars.
All right.
You know, where he's changing the letters?
Yeah. So the Monday deals to the Tuesday deals. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll give it 3 of those. They kind of look like the In-N-Out Burger logo. I'll give it that.
Yeah. Yeah. Another funny moment I like is when he and... Mike and Phoebe are escaping the police station, and the female mercenary comes out and shouts, "Hey," at Mike, and Mike turns. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's good stuff. Yeah, there's some really funny moments. So I will give this a positive recommendation. And if you're a Jesse Eisenberg fan and you haven't seen this already, go see it.
Yeah, entertaining. Mm-hmm. Well, that is a wrap on American Ultra. Thank you so much for listening. If you like what we're doing, please give us a rating, leave a positive review. You can give us your unfiltered opinion on Twitter at @AmericanScene_. We're also on Instagram at @AmericanScenePod. And if you'd like to follow either of your patriotic co-hosts, I'm Ben Rosen on Twitter at @NotThatBenRosen.
I'm Alan Austin on Twitter at @Alan_Austin_.
And we'll see you next time.